Hello and welcome to a very scary festive episode of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by the stop motion characters as masterpieces. I am Nick. I am the dissatisfied anthropomorphic personification of this podcast, and I am joined as ever by Roger.
Hold on a sec, let me just turn my head around.
And we are discussing, well, I was going to say our first Tim Burton film, but that's not really true, is it? This is The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, and it is... Everybody thinks of this as a Tim Burton film. There is certainly... It originated in... I think it started with a poem that he wrote.
When he was before he was famous, I think, yeah.
But it is not directed by him. It is not his screenplay. It is not his adaptation.
Tim Burton was, I think he was a Disney animator for a long time before he became Tim Burton. And it may have been while he was doing that that he sort of first wrote this poem.
Yeah, he wrote the poem in 81, I think, 82. And he tried to get it made as a TV holiday special. And Disney, being Disney, basically said, too weird, nope.
Yeah.
Eventually, they said the same thing to him and fired him.
yes.
And, as you say, he got a bit of a reputation doing live-action films. And eventually, Disney considered him marketable enough that they took this on.
I mean, this is post-Beetlejuice, post-Batman, probably. So he was already known for a certain style, which is kind of this slightly macabre, but not Lovecraftian. I mean, I tend to think of it as kind of sweet stories, but with this kind of macabre Adams Family kind of stuff.
I think it's worth looking at this in context. I mean, in the 90s, they were still showing the old Charlie Brown holiday specials as a frequent thing, at least in the UK. I remember seeing them.
Yes.
And those are probably better than most, but a lot of these holiday specials have a tendency to be very, very, very sweet indeed. Diabetics leave now.
Yes. And I think that Burton had as a lot of us do, had a bit of a reaction to them. But when it came to it, he did not, whether he didn't have the patience or the time or whatever, he didn't want to do a stop-motion film.
He had never worked with as an animator.
No.
He had not directed animation. And also, I strongly suspect, this being a Disney production, they had strong feelings about whom they would have in any given role. So they put in Harry Selick. This was his first feature. I don't think he has gone on to amazing fame, though he did also direct Coraline in 2009,
which is a similar film. Would eventually go on and do the Corpse Bride, but I don't know if that was computer animated. It certainly looks very similar to. I haven't looked into that at all. I just I know that he did go and do it, yeah. But this is traditional. This is
95.
So it's traditional stop motion, kind of Wallace and Gromit style, painfully moving. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't know how direction works in that context.
Generally, you can get you get a different class of flub, basically. And sometimes you can fix it because, you know, you spot the error on this frame, you can just shoot that frame again. This era, I think they are still editing by actually cutting frames rather than digitally. So it's hard work. But
I mean, the whole thing is pretty hard work and tedious, which is partly why Tim Burton wasn't involved, other than he didn't write the script even either. It's just his concept. He's credited as a writer, but I think that's...
He's credited as a producer, and it's based on the poem.
Okay. And the story is that we have... all the holidays have, all the holidays as in the American holidays, basically, because we have Thanksgiving, Halloween, Easter, Christmas are the ones that are kind of touched upon in the film, or at least you see a turkey on a tree, so I was assuming that was Thanksgiving. All these holidays have worlds, and they are all inhabited by creatures whose job it is, I'm not quite sure what their job is really, to bring the spirit of that holiday to the real world, I guess, and they're all led by a chief anthropomorphic character, Jack Skellington in the case of Halloween, Father Christmas, of course, in Christmas Town. We see the Easter Bunny. I did quite like that touch at one point. But it turns out that Jack Skellington, despite presumably these are kind of timeless, immortal beings, a la the Endless in Sandman. Again, we don't delve into any of that, but that's my guess. They're in some kind of Freudian shared dream world. I'm probably trying too hard to explain what's going on. But
look, merchandising.
Yeah, maybe
I saw a lot of Jack Skellington toys.
I have one downstairs, actually. Not personally, it's for my daughter.
Of course it is.
Jack is, for reasons we never quite understand, or never explored, he's unsatisfied with his lot. He does not enjoy, we don't think, scary.
I think it's not that he objects to what he's doing, it's just that it's getting boring because it's basically the same thing every time.
Yes, we come back at the end of a successful Halloween, but Jack, sort of thoughtful, goes wandering in the woods and finds this kind of grove where all the other worlds are. And it's sort of implied at this point that he doesn't even understand there are other worlds. It's completely new to him. That gets a bit woolly later, or it's hard to follow.
It is strongly suggested, I think, that his only experience up to this point has been the Halloween Town world and what you might call Earth.
Yes, whereas later on Santa seems well aware. Anyway, again, I'm probably thinking too hard about it. But he falls into Christmas Town. So we've had a few songs already. I've had perhaps slightly high expectations for the film. I found the first few songs of what we have, This Is Halloween, I liked it well enough. I didn't find it particularly memorable. I do love What's This, which is the one where he arrives in Christmas Town and he's like
Everything is new and Sense of Wonder and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that is probably my favourite song from the film.
I'll come back to that later.
Okay, fair enough. These are all composed, I think, by Danny Elfman.
Who also sings as Jack.
Sings as Jack. We have Chris Sarandon, who I didn't realise until a few minutes ago, as the voice of Jack, largely because he sounds quite like Danny Elfman. I think it was Danny Elfman first, and then Chris Sarandon was cast.
I didn't notice any particular clash between them, certainly.
No, it is one of those films. There are spoken lines, not every single line of dialogue is sung, but they're not, well, yeah, there are some. He is so excited that he wants to do Christmas now, so he gets back to Halloween Town and explains that they're going to do Christmas. The Halloween inhabitants get the wrong end of the stick because they think they're going to do a twisted, warped version of Halloween. I think Jack is thinking he just wants to do Christmas like a normal Christmas. But all the other creatures think they're going to do ruin Christmas.
I think the sense is not ruin, it's make it the thing we do.
We're going to have this holiday too, and let's make it like Halloween, because that's what we do. Yeah. So they kind of push their efforts toward that. We have the nice scene of the kind of, I don't know, duck-billed Frankenstein professor guy who has stitched together a bride of Frankenstein, and that is Sally, who's voiced by the ever excellent Catherine O'Hara. So she is, and again, this is where the cracks in the film start to show. So visually, I really like it. I do genuinely like that kind of Maybe it looks dated now. I'm not sure it does. And maybe I think partly because it's much copied, it's kind of exaggerated gothic.
Almost you could take most frames of this and say, yeah, that there is the Tim Burton look.
Yes, sort of a German impressionism crossed with Disney, I suppose.
Also the world looked different, which is quite impressive. I mean, the Christmas town looks like it's not a twisted version of Christmas. It's a version of Christmas.
It's straight out. Yeah. Whereas Halloween Town looks more Caligari-esque. And there's all looming towers and high contrast shadows. It's not, and I like the character. I like the mayor who has, you know, a happy face and a sad face, and he's constantly spinning around to one or the other. I like the little, little goblet lock, shock and barrel or something like that. The three little thugs.
Shock, also voiced by Catherine O'Hara.
Yes, and locked by Paul Rubens, I just noticed now, who is Pee Wee Herman, as I recall. But for me, will have forever be the spleen in Mystery Men. So he tells them to go off and kidnap Sanity Claus, and they come back with the Easter Bunny. I thought that was a really nice touch. They just got the wrong personification. But we have this kind of tacked-on love story. So Sally is in love with Jack Skellington.
That
could have worked really well, but in some instances she seems like she barely knows him, that he's up on a pedestal. In some scenes she's like his friend and they talk all the time. And then they end up together, but it doesn't do anything for me. I don't really understand what it just feels completely tacked on.
The aspect of this that irked me, because her other role in the story is to try to warn Jack, you know, that this isn't going to work, this is a mistake.
Yes.
And so what this ends up meaning is that the only significant female coded character is the fun police.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not saying that this is not a role that female characters can have, but when it is your only female character, I think it starts to stretch a bit and to be avoided.
Well, so she does dual role as fun police and kind of hapless lover.
The bits I enjoyed more where she is repeatedly poisoning her Frankenstein figure so that she can get out and do stuff.
Yes, she is smarter than her creator, and they're really nice touches. And I love the little macabre things, like he then decides to create one that's much more like him, so he kind of plops half his brain out and sticks it in this new creation. It's the visual touches like that. I really love it visually. The rest of the plot, suffice to say, is that he does. So Santa gets kidnapped by the three stooges and taken to the Boogeyman, who is
from an entirely different mythology.
He has no respect for his boss, presumably, if Skellington is his boss, and he's going to torture and kill Santa. I suppose that could be quite disturbing, except it's not really any threat, I guess, from my perspective. It doesn't feel like it, and it's just kind of again, I like his kind of slightly jazzy oogie boogie song. But so we have these two plot strands: Jack going off to do Christmas and Santa about to be tortured and killed, and Molly trying to rescue Santa. And there's some imaginative stuff, like she has detachable limbs, so she sends her hands down to go and untie him. She sends her leg to go and entice the big man. Lots of little visual stuff like that I really love. It's just, I don't know, for me, the plot is just all over the place, really. So he goes and Jack goes and does Halloween. It is horrible. All the presents come and try and eat the kids. It's terrifying.
He's shot down by NORAD. Call back the Star Man.
Yes, he does. He gets shot down. And then he has this kind of, I don't know, this epiphany of, I don't really know. Then he basically goes back to like, maybe I am a Halloween guy after all. I know with these kind of, you know, the music there is for these emotional turns in the film. But that one in particular, that scene where he's been shot down and he's in the graveyard and he's coming round to, oh, I am a Halloween guy, you know, maybe I was happy all along. It landed a bit flat for me. And I think maybe because that's the emotional turning point of the film, or it should be, because it didn't, either I didn't like the song or it didn't, just didn't convince me. I don't know. I think because I feel like the movie hinges on that and it didn't move me, it led to the whole film feeling a bit flat, ultimately, I think.
Yeah, for me, it's a slightly separate angle because, I am a fan of musicals. Not in a big way, but I enjoy quite a few of them. But what I think of as musicals is things like Guys and Dolls or Fiddler on the Roof.
Right.
Things of that sort. And those are basically dramatic presentations where people sometimes burst into song.
Right, okay, yes.
And this is... There are some spoken bits, but it's almost entirely sung.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I've seen more songies, but I get what you mean, yes.
And this has what... I did a quick calculation. This has one song every 7 minutes. Guys and Dolls has one song every 10 minutes. But I think the Guys and Dolls songs are shorter.
Right.
And... I think maybe it's, honestly, I think maybe it's Danny Elfman, or at least the work he produced. There is nothing here that says to me, oh, this is a song I will find myself humming along in the car, or singing as I take a bath, or something. And there is nothing here that struck me that way, the way a poison could develop a cold.
Or, you know, or even, you know, it's not... Moana has some pretty banging tunes in it that I still listen to now.
Yeah.
I agree. Moana too, less so. It is a bit subjective. And there are some, I do like What's This? I like This Is Halloween. I did quite like
but nothing of it really stuck with me in that way.
I think I agree with you. I was a little underwhelmed by the songs.
The songs are clearly trying to do a whole lot of the emotional heavy lifting, particularly in that graveyard scene, as you mentioned. For me, that was the primary letdown. And then, yeah, all right, Jackie's not super convincing as a line delivery himself. But if it were a better song, it might have worked better.
Yes. I feel it is let down. I mean, it's a lovely idea. There's lots of visuals that I adore, you know, and then, you know, for instance, we're then immediately, we've got to wrap the other plot up. Let's wrap it up. And it just is kind of almost instantly Jack pops down, deals with the boogeyman. There is a little bit
rescues Sally, who has got captured in the process of trying to rescue Santa.
Yeah, which was a shame. I just, if you compare that, for instance, to the Wrong Trousers finale in Wallace and Gromit, which is just phenomenal. And then we have this where he's kind of dodging some spinning discs and things. It doesn't have that kind of, I suppose maybe that's, we've got a high bar, because we're comparing it to Wallace and Gromit, which is, you know, generally, even when it's not as good, is generally excellent. I know they're not musicals, but the stop motion and the imagination. I don't think the animation's by any means bad here. And the fact that they look kind of stilted and stop motion, that works in the context of the story. So I don't mind any of the... Some people, I think, dislike true stop motion. And
I'm a fan. I mean, I grew up with this stuff, so...
Yeah,
It doesn't look old-fashioned to me. I didn't grow up with black and white. That doesn't look old-fashioned to me either, but, yeah. I just watch across multiple styles. I can still enjoy the CG in The Last Starfighter. Pity the rest of the film's a bit rubbish, but, yeah.
I haven't seen it for a year. Part of me wants to see it again. Part of me doesn't. I don't know. I suppose I'm trying to articulate why it just didn't quite land for me. There's lots that I loved, but it never was greater than some of its parts for me. The imagery was amazing, and I don't think the plot lived up to that. You don't have to think things through tremendously, but I like plots to be internally consistent. And I feel like Jack as a character, I'm not sure what sort of character arc he's going on. He's a bit dissatisfied. He gets shot down.
He's got this whole sense of wonder. You know, here is this whole new thing. Wow.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of implied that this will be a small strand of that will be mixed into his future Halloweens, and that will deal with his ennui. But
well, that would be the guess, wouldn't it? But they don't explicitly. We don't see like little scary Christmas lights around Halloween Town from then on. That would be nice if he took Christmas and put it to it. But he doesn't really do that. He basically just like goes back to normal. He kind of ends up with Sally, kind of. I mean, I mean, they do end up together, but I don't really. It doesn't feel earned to me. I don't ship them in the way I loved the Starman romance. That worked for me. It felt tragic. It felt real. Here, it's just like, oh, we need a love story. Plonk. There we go. So there's lots that works for me. I think it looks spectacular. For me, I again, it's a bit, it's one of those things that is quite subjective. If you don't like the look of it, you're not going to enjoy the film. Mm. If you don't particularly like the songs, you're not going to enjoy the film. I love the look of it.
Yeah.
I like the songs well enough. I like you. I perhaps like them a bit more than you, but I can't say, you know, I watched The Greatest Showman, which, I mean, if you're going to do a film, a feel-good film about P.T. Barnum, bloody hell. It's like doing one about Pol Pot, but... the songs stuck with me and I still enjoy some of those. So I think you're right. None of these were quite toe-tapping. They just all felt a bit unmemorable.
Well, they're mostly recitatives. You know, here is the clever line that I've got to deliver and I will put it to music as well. Rather than here is a song which is talking about what's happening. As I say, some of that is because it's mostly sung rather than a little bit spoken.
But then I quite like clever lyrics and wording. That's probably why I like What's This more, because there is a lot of kind of, wake up, Jack, this isn't fair, and all that kind of stuff. I like that kind of fast-moving diet, but the rest of the songs don't do that so much. I don't want to dump on the film.
I would like to call out for praise the design of the mayor, who reminded me a lot of the Blue Meanies in Yellow Submarine.
Yes.
That kind of style.
Oh, I haven't thought of that, but yes, yeah. I don't know how involved Tim Burton was with the visuals, but it's that style that you look at it and you think, oh, that's a Tim Burton film. And I suspect many people, as I did before we went to watch this, just thought this was a Tim Burton film because it is so his sort of thing.
It's certainly a visual style not entirely unlike what he's used when he's been directing live action. So,
yeah.
And he, as I say, he's credited as a producer here. I'm sure he had some influence.
But, and I love his, you know, I love the gothic Gotham in his version of Batman.
Mm.
God knows how many Batmen ago that was. By now. So I do. It's a style I like. But yeah, ultimately, I'm sorry to say I was a little underwhelmed.
A question. When did you first see this?
This time I hadn't. I had seen bits of it, and I was. It's a bit like The Wizard of Oz. I didn't actually see all the way through from beginning to end until like 3 or 4 years ago, but I felt like I'd seen it before because he's so familiar with the kind of visuals and things. But this is the, and I knew What's This, the song. I didn't really know any of the other. Maybe I knew This Is Halloween, but otherwise, no. This is the first time I've seen it.
Because I think possibly we're suffering from the same problem as a modern fantasy reader reading Tolkien. Because when this came out, I think it was much more of a departure from the standard.
Yes, I suppose. Remember when we watched all our kind of 70s science fiction films? And in that context, I could see why Star Wars was such a relief.
Yeah.
I guess if you'd seen nothing but sweet Disney films, as they were at the time, Disney's changed a bit now. Nothing else has become the evil empire. But you could argue it always was. If you'd seen nothing but that and then you saw this, it would be such a breath of fresh air. Yeah, I think that is certainly worth considering in context.
Masterpiece is not really the big thing anymore, but I would say not masterpiece. It has some good things to say. I'm like you, I'm very impressed with the visual approach. but the plot and the characterization, and for me at least, the songs just don't really match up with that.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much bang where you are. It's everything's subjective, isn't it? For me, it's not a masterpiece. It's not even a sort of film I'd think, oh, I'll watch this every Christmas. But yeah, maybe if I'd watched it when I was 12, that would have been chronologically impossible. But if I had, then maybe. I like that it exists. I like the kind of style. But
it's not offensive, mostly. As I say, it's a female character, fun police. But
she has got something about her as well. She's not completely weird. But I agree.
Yeah.
Like it. It didn't live up to the potential.
That's another thing I think we've talked about before. When a film is universally praised and we come to it for the first time, I at least feel a certain amount of, well, yeah, it's okay, but I wouldn't rave about this. And then I feel possibly more negative than it deserves as a result of that.
That's a hard thing, isn't it? I don't know how you avoid that, really. Whereas if you stumble upon a film you've never heard of, you know, at 10 o'clock at night, some old black and white film.
Lights in New York, for example, previous episode.
Yes, then you're much more positive. Well, that's how I found Treasure of Sierra Madre. I'd never heard of it. I fucking loved it. And Double Impact. That's a different film. Double Indemnity. consequently, I absolutely adore those films. Yeah, it's funny. I don't know how you avoid that, but if we just show our working. But yes, we went into this with high hopes, or I did. It didn't quite live up to that. And consequently, you're disappointed in a way that perhaps is unfair to the film as it actually exists. But there we are. That's us. That's our festive opinion on The Nightmare Before Christmas.
We'll be back next year, probably.